hairdressing became a sort of a sanctuary for me. With L'Oréal, they're amazing because they send you overseas. You do all these global international workshops and they train you to the, you know, to the nth degree. I did my MBA in the best business school in Paris, you know, like it's phenomenal. But you're also exhausted. You're exhausted. I had a big chip on my shoulder. I really needed to prove to the world I'm not a loser.
Welcome back to the Salon Owners Collective podcast. Now, today's episode is a bit of a wild one because you're about to meet Alicia. She's a real powerhouse salon owner, one with the most extraordinary career story. One of the most interesting ones I've ever heard. This is a two-part episode, a series, if you will. She started as a 16-year-old mum, where everybody said that she had ruined her future. And now fast forward, she started running the L'Oréal Professional Division, L'Oréal Professional Australia, and then L'Oréal Professional New Zealand. So Alicia opens up about the rise from chaos in her early life to corporate success and what it's really like to lead one of the world's biggest beauty companies and the life-changing lessons that she learned about leadership, resilience, and owning your voice in a boardroom full of suits. This is a raw, inspiring story, and it's guaranteed to make you rethink your own leadership journey. I'm excited for you to dive in and meet Alicia. Alicia, thanks for joining me on the Salon Owners Collective podcast. So pleased you're here.
Thank you for having me.
So what I'd like to do is start with, like, who are you, Alicia? Where are you in the world? So let's start with that. Like, where are you?
I'm in Melbourne, which is obviously in Australia, and I'm a salon owner. I own a salon called Alexander Jane, but I am a Kiwi, so I'm a Kiwi in Australia.
I think there's a few of those.
Yeah. There's a few of us that, you know, banner the ship, I say.
So I really wanted to have you on the podcast because you've got a really interesting journey, and I would really love you to share that, where you've been, the career highlights that you've had, and like where you've landed, and I guess what's the future. So I think it would be pretty great if you would be so kind to share, like, how did you even get into this industry? Like, what got you here? Take us back to those early days.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I didn't intend to be a hairdresser at all. And my story is a bit of a classic story of how you would generalize a young girl going into hairdressing. So I was 16 and I found myself pregnant, which, as you can imagine, wasn't ideal. And there's quite a big backstory to how that came about. My family had been super religious and, you know, sex education wasn't a big thing and there was a lot of burning in hell. And so, you know, nature took its way and, you touch me and I get pregnant. So, life took a pretty dramatic turn. It had been pretty tumultuous up until that moment. And, I stayed at school pregnant, which was pretty outrageous at the time. And I remember I was at school in New Zealand and the school dean allowed me to stay at school. And her words to myself and my mother were, well, this is a perfect example of consequences for actions.
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah. Yeah, ouch. And you know what? I think that set a fire in me that, there were a lot of things that were going against me at that particular that time. And, you know, not only was I having a baby, I was also in a really violent relationship. So there was a lot of challenges stacked up against me. And interestingly enough, if I look back to how I became you know, it sounds really dramatic, but how did I become a hairdresser? I ended up working for my mum's best friend on a Saturday because I had nothing at that particular time. The laws had changed in New Zealand. I wasn't even entitled to a benefit, so I had no money. Parents' business was in great trouble, so they had no money. They were hugely supportive and enabled Kimberly and I to stay at home, and they looked after us really well. But yeah, hairdressing became a sort of a sanctuary for me. And also, you could imagine, I mean, at school I wasn't great. Like, I thought I was going to become a lawyer, because I'm really good at arguing, but my school was would have said differently. So, you know, I joined the hair salon, and all of a sudden my extroversion made sense. You know, I love talking to people. I'm comfortable talking to people. And color became an opportunity where all of a sudden numbers made sense to me. You know, maths was my worst subject. I failed school C maths worse the second time, probably because I was pregnant and not really in a good headspace. But that's how I ended up becoming a hairdresser. So a typical kind of, you know, school dropout, no other choices. But it led me to a phenomenal career that I would never have dreamed of. And certainly the doubters didn't believe that I would get to where I did in the end.
Yeah, I love that. So why don't you take us, you became qualified. What happened next?
Yeah, so I touched on colour being, you know, a really exciting part of my hairdressing journey, because all of a sudden numbers made sense. I was good at it. And that journey really started with L'Oreal. So, you know, we all have our favorite brands that we fall in love with. And typically it's attached to the education that you experienced at the beginning of your journey as a hairdresser. And mine was L'Oreal. And I'll never forget the time that the educator came into the salon. They were called technicians back then. And she had a cell phone and a company car. And I was like, oh my God, I just want to be her. Like, that's holy shit. And then, of course, you know, I went to the color keys and different education, and I just loved it. Like, I just was in awe of this company and this role, and it was just absolutely what I wanted to do and be. So yeah, I qualified as a hairdresser, worked as a hairdresser, and then all the time managing and navigating a little person. And then I stalked L'Oreal, as all good lunatic hairdressers do, particularly at events after a few wines. The advice I was given at the time was win color trophy. Well, I wasn't, like, I was good at color, but I wasn't like an artist standard. And get an education, experience. So I went on to work as in a private hairdressing school. Shunned upon, I know, and I do agree that you can't teach someone to cut hair in 12 months. I gave it a really good go, though. But that was actually a great experience, because the company that I worked for enabled me to do a teaching diploma, it was almost like a teaching degree. And I learned all about, you know, the different learning styles, which really helped unlock my own learning style. Like, shit, I'm a learner. It's okay. I learn by doing. So I learned all about lesson planning and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And eventually L'Oreal came knocking, and I joined them in the late 90s as an educator. And I had made it in life. Like, they gave me a company. I still have my restricted license. I had to, which means, like, for those around the world, means I couldn't drive alone. I think I might even have my learners, actually. So I had to get my driver's license. I had to do like a defensive driving course just so that I could drive the company car. And that's where my journey with L'Oreal began.
I love that. I love that you had the aspiration quite early on, like the car and the cell phone, like that was a moment for you. And can I just say the maths making sense? Like, there's not many people that 10 plus 30 equals 20. Like, that doesn't make sense for a lot of people. But I had a similar experience. It's like, oh, all of the things that don't traditionally make sense suddenly made sense for me in the salon environment. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you had a good career. You actually had a really long career in L'Oreal. Do you want to just walk us through the timeline? Because I feel like you did all of the things.
Yes.
All of the roles.
I did all the jobs in the professional division. So I started as an educator, and then I saw that the education manager got to stand on the stage of Colour Trophy and wear a really good dress. Like, that was pretty cool. So that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be the education manager. So ironically, I didn't get it the first time round. So I worked as an educator on L'Oreal Professional for about 4 years, and then I missed out on the education manager's role. So I switched to sales and went out into the field working for Redken, which is part of the L'Oreal family. And discovered that I was quite good at that and that it was actually a little bit easier than being an educator because you didn't have to be in the salon for 3 hours and, you know, have the judgmental hairdresser looking at you going, do you really know what you're doing? Do you really know how to teach me how to do this? Questioning everything as we do as hairdressers. So I went on to be in the field doing sales. And then I actually broke up with L'Oreal for a little while. And went on to work for Hallmark greeting cards. Now that's a different world. I did not know
wow.
that greeting cards. When you look at a greeting card display, there is actually math behind that. And there is a reason why you buy certain cards for certain occasions. And that was a really big stretch for me. I thought XL was a brand of computer at that particular time. So I was 100% computer illiterate. And I was running a team of 7 territory managers and 120 merchandisers. And it was very, I didn't even know how to email. So that was a big stretch, but a great lesson. For those of you that live in New Zealand, if you ever get the chance to meet an owner of a Pack and Save, very wealthy people. They've earned the right to be there, but they're very wealthy people and they're very smart. So we were pitching for the contract, and the guy that employed me had run Redken, and he knew that I just had the gift of the gab. So I went in there and spun tales to supermarket owners to, and I believe they still are the card supplier in Pack and Save. I haven't checked recently with. But that was a really great lesson in management, and obviously I established some computer skills. And if you try and print Excel, it does actually go for infinity. And if you unplug all the printers in the office and replug them, it just keeps going. So there was quite a few excellent lessons there. And then L'Oreal came a knocking again. And offered me the role of education manager in New Zealand for LP, which obviously I accepted. And that was a great, I've made it in life. You know, could I go any further? I got to wear the dress at Colour Trophy.
Yay!
it was awesome. And then the opportunity to move to Australia came. So I moved across to Australia as a state manager. And at that particular time, the state manager, and it was here in Melbourne for Victoria. You know, Victoria is the size of New Zealand. So I saw the career opportunities, and you're running both sales and education teams. And again, that was a huge step. You know, Australia is quite different to New Zealand. It's a lot harsher. The culture is very different. We're very Anglo-Saxon in New Zealand. We're a lot more polite in New Zealand. But we're also frustrating because we don't say what we're thinking. We keep it, so we have water cooler conversations, whereas here in Australia, it's just like in your face. You're like, whoa. When I moved to Melbourne and took over Victoria, it had been in decline for quite some time. And that sort of became my journey, you know, my sales role, it had been decline. I grew it. The education team hadn't been hitting some goals. I grew it. And then I moved to Victoria and, took on this opportunity as a state sales manager and, you know, grew that territory significantly, which led to being an education manager again But this time of Australia, so a much bigger bigger role, and a lot more strategic role. Education for brands is soft sales. You know, you're infiltrating people's businesses. You're helping them grow their business, but at the same time, you're recruiting disciples of your brand, and you work closely with the marketing and the sales team to achieve their objectives. So I ended up with this sort of interesting combination of both sales and commercial experience, but also education, which from a business perspective, particularly when you're selling hair color primarily, being able to educate, and it's interesting now when we look around the world that, you know, from a marketing lens, education is becoming a key driver of recruiting consumers to any brand, whether it be makeup, hair, clothing, how to wear your clothes, how to style your hair, how to apply your makeup, etc. I got the opportunity to move to brand management, and now that was another big crazy step, where I did some crazy things. I'd never managed P&L, and the one crazy thing in L'Oreal is that there's a lot of spreadsheets and there's a lot of documents and there's a lot of stuff, but a lot of it is like English, random French word. And you don't often ask what's this random French word, because you just like rest of fear. You just kind of know that means the remainder. But there was one word that I just didn't know what it meant, and it was Rex. And my boss kept saying to me, look, you know, your Rex is just not where it needs to be. You need to resolve it. I need you to really focus on this. And he said this to me a couple of times. And I was like, you know, I tell him, like, I just, you know, I'd sit in the finance meetings and I just didn't know what anyone was talking about. And in the end, I said to him, look, okay, it's fine. Tell me where Rex sits and I will go and talk with Rex and we will resolve it.
And where was Rex?
Rex actually means profit. So I didn't get to meet Rex. And I think my boss at that particular time did consider he might fire me, because he's like, who on earth have I got running this business?
I love
that. Why didn't you just say that? Why didn't you just say profit, for God's sake?
And so Rex is actually a French word for profit. Love it.
R-E-X, Rex. Yeah. So
because I was trying to think, what's the acronym? Like R, like where's the P for the profit? But no, it's actually a French word.
French word. Like mm-hmm. It's the word, it's the name.
Love it.
Yeah. So, and I was running a brand called Matrix that I loved. It was a cool brand. It was about community and it was about being in the trenches with the hairdresser, which I absolutely, I loved that so much. And ironically, I took it over and it was flying, and then it smashed down. They have a saying at L'Oreal, eat what you cook. And the guy that got promoted had done some sort of really big one-off opportunities that couldn't be replicated. So I couldn't get that extra $500,000 just out of nowhere. So that was a very long 5 years on that brand of repositioning it. I hadn't run marketing teams. I hadn't run finance teams before. So it was complex and big, and stretched me well beyond anything that I ever thought could. But in the end, we got there, and we improved the Rex considerably. We didn't quite get to the percentage that they wanted me to, but we got friggin' close. And we built a really fun, great community brand, and I loved it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. My goal was always to be a divisional GM. So how it structured, or how it was structured then, is that you ran a brand, and within that brand you had, you know, your marketing team, your sales team, your education team, and your finance team, and you reported up into a divisional GM that oversaw the full professional products division. And then the opportunity came to return to New Zealand. New Zealand was in a little bit of strife as well. The business hadn't grown for numerous years. I came home and got to be the divisional GM of New Zealand, and navigated that through COVID. So That was pretty crazy. I took on the role and I
was that L'Oreal or Matrix?
L'Oreal. No. That was the full division.
Oh, the full division. All the brands.
And now I'm in charge of all the brands. So I'm the big little boss in New Zealand, which is kind of a joke because I was, pretty crazy when I was in New Zealand and I always used to embrace the party and stuff. So some of the people that I was leading were still there. They're like, wow. I'm like, I know, who would have thought? This crazy woman. I think I know what I'm doing. I know what Rex is now, so we're all good.
Yeah.
And I went on this, turnaround with the New Zealand team, re-establishing the brands, re-establishing the relationship with the New Zealand community. And similar story. We went through COVID, which was obviously a really weird journey. And it was weird for me because I was actually commuting between Australia and New Zealand. So I used to get on a plane on either a Sunday or a Monday, fly to New Zealand and come home either on a Thursday or a Friday. And so then when the initial lockdown started happening, I was here in Australia and I actually ran New Zealand remotely while you guys were still open. So that was a really interesting time in leadership and learning that this existed. Like, how crazy is this? We had Teams, which is obviously a version of Zoom or whatever. We had used that with the Australian team for months. We had never once turned on the camera. We just used it and we used to have our phones on the tables. And one day we just went, shit, you're there. So that was a really interesting time as a leader, not only supporting your team, but also supporting the community. And then obviously the reverse happened. I came back to New Zealand. I did the quarantine a couple of times, got to walk around in the car park and listen to the podcasts, things like that. Then New Zealand went into lockdown. So learned a lot about, keeping our customers engaged, keeping our team engaged, how we supported businesses they bounce back into, reopening, which everybody experienced. And then, boom, we were back to growth. And we also had some really big cultural challenges. So I had a lot of time not only turning the business around, but focusing on people and culture and the importance of trust and speak up. And that was a really, really interesting time as a leader to be dealing with some really big internal structure while also challenges, while also trying to lead the team to growth. And I think my biggest lesson in that as a leader is that authenticity is really important. Creating a safe space to give feedback and creating a culture of feedback is really important, even if the feedback isn't great. And it doesn't always just have to be top down. It has to be, from team to, and I pride myself on the fact that I always, who you see is who you get. And I almost describe it as a flat leadership. We're in this together. I've got jobs that you don't have to do and you've got jobs that I don't have to do. It doesn't make me more important or, yes, I can tell you you have to do something, but I wouldn't ask you if I wouldn't do it myself. Or it wouldn't make us go faster. That was a really, that was a really rewarding and positive time. So I came off the back of, getting Matrix back to growth after really big lessons and the same thing, another big key lesson is the team. You've always got, you can be the best leader in the world and have all the best ideas, but if you don't have your team behind you, you can't go anywhere. So I'd had these two really big, big jobs and I traveled a lot. When I was working on Matrix, I was traveling around Australia constantly. Then I was moving between Australia and New Zealand, which was bonkers. Like, that was just the most bonkers thing I've ever done. I still don't really want to go into an airport, as well as with L'Oreal, they're amazing because they send you overseas. So you do all these global international workshops and which are phenomenal, they're phenomenal and they train you to the you know, to the nth degree. I did my MBA in the best business school in Paris. You know, like, it's phenomenal. But you're also exhausted. You're exhausted. And L'Oréal itself is a sink or swim culture. It's highly competitive. And, you know, so it's I was just constantly running. And, you know, going back to that 16-year-old girl that was pregnant, who dropped out of school and, you know, ironically became a hairdresser, I had a big chip on my shoulder. I really needed to prove to the world I'm not a loser. I'm better than any of you and anything that you say about me. And I think that drove me beyond probably what the normal person would do. You know, that was the drive in me is insatiable. I couldn't switch it off. So then I returned to Australia, and I became they did discuss going to China with me. Again, that education link, ironically and unsurprisingly, in China, hair color is not the easiest cat to grow. Primarily because culturally, when you're young, you change your hair color. But once you sort of hit that sort of anywhere between sort of 30, maybe late 30s, early 40s, you just color your hair black. You just go back to black. And so it's not uncommon for a Chinese salon to maybe only have 10 or 12 shades in there and a lot of lightener, but not a lot of diversity. And so growing the color category is really challenging. In China, brands like Kérastase go ballistic because they love luxury brands. And so that sets that region aside from a luxury perspective, but salon is challenging. And to be honest, I probably would have done it, but COVID was kicking off there and the Chinese government are a whole net level. You know, they're locking you in buildings. You couldn't get out of the country. We just kept going through this process of all the things that I would need to sacrifice. And then I was like,
yeah.
I live in New Zealand, Australia. I don't want to be locked in a building for 3 days and not get out of China. So I think that this is a pass for me. What other options do I have for now while Shanghai sorts its stuff out? And you also had to have like a COVID test every 72 hours. And if you didn't have it, you could go into like quarantine jail and stuff. And I was like, no. So then I took on they called it the Omni Sales Director's role for Australia and New Zealand. It's a really big role, and we were going through a massive transformation. And so for those that are listening to this podcast that are working with L'Oréal, you obviously now know that there's an online portal, so you purchase all your products through online. We were changing the structure of the business so that we could allow for different channels. So starting to move into the Meccas, the Sephoras, navigating the beast of Chemist Warehouse. There was a lot changing and a lot of moving parts. And I had a fabulous new boss who's just the you know, so visionary. And I know Carlos won't mind this, me saying this. I said to him, "You are the nicest micromanaging, controlling I've ever worked for in my life." And he was, and he is. He's brilliant. But it was, and you know, he was there, you know, to grow the business exponentially and push the boundaries. And this was my, you know, third go on the merry-go-round, where I was, you know, having to beat the odds and work every hour that that God sends and push really hard. And I think, you know, 6 months further down the track, you know, the goal was to build the structure to support the role that I was in, but it wasn't there yet. And it was a lot. It was just 60 hours a week just wasn't going to cut what I was, what I needed to do. And my daughter announced that she was having a baby. And, you know, one of the decisions that I made, you know, partway through my career is that I wasn't going to have the third child because I knew that I would be a grandmother, a young grandmother, which I am. And that I would wait for that grandchild and I would be available and I would, enjoy and love every second of that little person. And I just knew that L'Oreal and grandchildren and enjoying every second of that grandchild and being available like I wanted to be just didn't match. And we went through the talent review, as you do at L'Oreal, and sometimes you're at the top of the talent pile and sometimes you're at the bottom. I've had a go at both. And at this particular time, I wasn't at the top. And the options for me were stay in the current role that I am and tough it out, or take another overseas assignment. And if I took another overseas assignment, it would obviously be somewhere in Asia because of the location, the zone that we worked in, and that there were no guarantees of coming back to Australia. And that's not, you know, any reflection on L'Oreal. It's how it's how it works. You have to go into the mix, and Australia was a highly sought after country to lead because it's super profitable, it's a mature market. So a lot of expats coming in from Europe typically get that particular role. So it was unlikely. I'd have to really pull a rabbit out of a hat to get that opportunity. And because I had done this quite significant restructure between Australia and New Zealand. So the structure that I built in New Zealand changed when I left, and it now reports into Australia. Still very much its own business and still has a very strong local team to govern the business. But I made my position in New Zealand redundant. So there was no longer a professional products GM, it's a country manager now. And there was a redundancy package that was there. And when I sat with the HRD and we went through the talent review and he's like, here are your options. I'm like, oh, whippity-doo, that sounds awesome. Kill myself over here or kill myself over here. Is there anything in the middle? And he said, well, and you know, he's a beautiful man. And he said, what if I said to you that your redundancy package was still available? Would that be something you'd want to explore? And I was like, are you trying to get rid of me? Are you trying to push me out? Am I like further down the talent pool than you? You know, like paranoia. He's like, no, not at all. Not at all. Anyway, he said, do you want me to explore it for you? And he did. And it was a really good question. 25 years at L'Oreal is, and it was a redundancy. And, you know, and they're a very generous, good company. They take their pound of flesh 100%, but they give, you know, as much as they take. And I never thought that I would leave L'Oreal. Like, it was my fairy tale, you know. It defined who I was. It made me more important than I thought I was. It was my everything. But I think that, you know, the thought of missing out on now Penelope and not having the freedom and flexibility to be with her. And I really felt that I owed that to my daughter. You know, you imagine being 16 and I describe the career that I've had. There was not a lot of mum and daughter, you know, time. My family, my inner sanctuary were amazing with both of my children. But they missed out a lot of me, and I was doing that so that they could have, you know, all the, you know, the holidays and the cars and the nice house and all the things that I thought that they needed. And I'm sure that they were very grateful for those. They certainly miss them now, but they didn't get my time. And I really wanted to be there for Kimberly and now Penelope. So I took the decision to leave and take the package.
Hey, it's me again. I just wanted to interrupt and jump in here quickly to say thanks for listening to the podcast. I really appreciate you being here. Just one question though, if you are listening to this episode and thinking, oh my God, this is me, but I'm just not sure what to do, well, don't worry, I've got some strategies for you. The Salon Mastery Program will help you develop and implement 100K team, 100K mindset, strategies and steps designed to help you lead your team to enjoy 100K careers and install the 100K mindset and motivation so you can help build that inside of your team. The systems, the processes to master the 100K day so you can build the Million Dollar Salon. So I want to invite you to join me for a complimentary Million Dollar Strategy call. We'll discuss your business, your role in the business. Let's see if I'm the right person to help you grow your business and your team. Together, we can reach the Million Dollar Mark. All you need to do is click the Apply Now button in the show notes of this very episode. You're welcome to book a time, a strategy call. We'll have a chat. All right, that's enough for me. Let's get back to the episode. How did you go from that to opening a salon? Was was that the obvious next thing to do, or is that a journey to get there?
No, not at all. No, I wasn't going to be it. No, I used to joke about this. I used to joke in the Zoom meetings when we were getting smashed. Oh, well, you guys are all screwed. At least I can cut hair. You know, I've got something I can go and do. What are you guys going to do? You know, AI is coming. No, not at all. And, I'd always played with the idea in my head like a joke. But my parents had run electrical firms and they'd, it was a disaster. They lost their home. It was terrible. They'd had really bad luck. So I was absolutely sworn off running my own business. And so how it came about was I agreed in my head that I would take 6 months off. The day that I finished L'Oreal Penelope was born, how's that for a sign? And I was just able to just fully immerse myself and be there and support Kimberly. And we all remember, for those of us that have children, having a baby for the first time, you're just freaking out all the time. And just to be able to be there and be 100% present for her was something that I'd never, ever done before. So that was really magical. But at the same time, I started doing lots of weird stuff, obsessively. I'm a clean person, but I was obsessively cleaning. And if I wasn't cleaning, I was watching cleaning shows. And I had a lot of anxiety for no reason. And yeah, I realized that I was coming off being in fight or flight for 25 years. I realized that all of a sudden, I remember coming back to New Zealand and flying back, and you have to fill out what you do for a job, and looking at my partner, I'm like, I'm not writing unemployed on this. No way am I writing unemployed on this. Normally I write general manager, and he goes, well, just write that. I'm like, but I'm not a general manager anymore. What am I? It was a really big come down. And I realized that I had lived in this weird bubble of L'Oreal for 25 years. And I had lived it. I'd breathed it. It was everything that I knew and was. And all of a sudden, who was I? And who was I without L'Oreal? And who was I going to be? And my friends started saying, it's so weird that you answer the phone when we call, or you come and you, when you come to dinner and stuff, you speak. I'm like, you mean I come to dinner and speak? I used to speak. And they said, no, you didn't. You were always, and I realized just how I had not been present in my life. And that gave me a really big fright. I had sacrificed everything for this company, and it wasn't my own company.
And that's a wrap. I'm sure you agree that is a bit of a journey from being a teenage mum to one of the top of the world's biggest beauty brands. Proof that courage and drive can take you literally anywhere. Now, next week, this is when everything changes, because at 25 years of being at L'Oreal, Alicia walks away from the corporate life just to start all over again, this time building something that's truly her own. And you'll hear what it takes to really open a salon from scratch, the systems she used to scale fast, and how she's created freedom without losing her soul in the process. So trust me, you don't want to miss this second episode, part two of the story, where Alicia becomes a true salon CEO. All right, till next week, ciao for now.